Hi there, and welcome to the One Pres Pod, a podcast for First Presbyterian Church in Fort Smith. On this podcast, we talk about all things related to faith and the life of followers of Jesus. Join us.
Welcome to the One Pres Pod. It's Reverend Tasha Blackburn with...
Well, me, Tasha.
With Reverend Phil Blackburn. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
With a frog in my
throat. Good morning.
But the joy of the Lord in my heart.
And the rain in the sky. We are coming to you today on a gray and rainy day.
Some might say dreek.
Dreek is what they would say in Scotland, which is what an overcast day like this is. I wanted to, before we begin, Phil, you know, December is right around the corner, which we all know means freak out.
Yeah, let's all panic.
Yeah, let's panic because the Christmas list is really long and how do we decide and everything. And we're not immune to that either. We all face that. And especially if you have a big family or you got children you're trying to figure out. And I thought I would share today, you know this, but I really recommend it. In our family, how many gifts do the kids get in our family?
First off, to answer your first question, there are two kids that we know about.
Yes, exactly, that we claim.
Yep. And I believe our kids each get three gifts.
They get three gifts from us. That's right. Mm-hmm. And it's...
They get frankincense, they get myrrh,
and
sometimes gold.
Yeah, and sometimes gold. Yes, exactly. Well, no, they got three. We just decided that right when they were born, actually. So they never knew anything else. And something I love about that is I remember when one of them was about eight and this time of year, and they came home from school and they were like, did you know that other families get more than three gifts? But by then it was set, you know, and they didn't mind. To me, it's been really helpful because when their stuff was cheap, you know, when they're five and six and something costs $11 or whatever, it stopped me. It was a good barrier for me. And now that they're 15 and 18, whew.
It's expensive. Well, and we should be clear, too. We did not impose this rule on grandparents.
Oh, well, so, please, as if we have a right to impose anything.
This was just from you and me, right?
Yeah, like, that's
and then
from
little
us. They get
trinkety
gifts.
Type stuff in their stockings. Yeah, but three gifts, and one was always the Santa gift, although we never gave Santa credit for it.
No,
it was
the big Santa gift. Gives the stockings.
Right, I know, but like the big gift. Like the big...
I'm reminding you of the history in our own household. Do you like that?
I do, especially since you have the memory of a goldfish.
Exactly. Well, I just think it's interesting because we feel so much pressure as gift givers. And it can really get away from us. Mm-hmm. It really can. And talk about sucking the joy out of the season. We do try to remind ourselves, out loud we remind ourselves, that's not the point of right now. But it's hard internally not to just get revving.
Right.
So, you know.
You know, it's interesting because Christmas does, like, a lot. Like, we just had Thanksgiving. And Thanksgiving very much tends to become about the trappings, right? The meal, the football games, if you partake of those. When do you eat your pie on Thanksgiving Day? Who's going to be there? Like, all these various Thanksgiving traditions, memories of Thanksgiving's past. And... you know, Christmas becomes similar, except on a larger scale,
right?
Oh,
I was going to say, Christmas is that times 10.
Yeah, right? Of like, you know, we get very caught up in these things. And, you know, it's a cliche that goes on around this time of year. You'll see that Jesus is the reason for the season stuff.
Yes, yes.
And then we'll just go back to, we'll look at that and be like, oh, yes, right. And then we'll just go back to all the trappings.
And then go put it all on the credit card.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
But even, and you would think, well, at least, Phil, even if that happens in people's households, at least that doesn't happen in the church, right? At least the church during this season is not beholden to, you know, traditions and trappings. At least it, surely, right, can focus on, it's hard to even say, Jesus. Because it's hard to say that with a straight face, because that was a completely ironic statement.
We get caught up, don't we?
We do get caught up.
We get caught up.
You know, we get caught up. And some of it is, I mean, I am not anti the trappings. Everybody loves those. I had a new members class last night, and I was the only one here, and I went into the sanctuary, and it was completely dark, and I just went over and turned the tree on.
Yeah.
Because it's like, most people don't get to see the sanctuary that way, in the dark, with just the big 20-foot Christmas tree lit up, and it's lovely in there, just yeah. beautiful, and I sent a couple people in to look at it, so I love the trappings as much as anybody. But I bring all this up, Tasha, about these ideas of trappings, these ideas of mm-hmm. vestiges, these ideas of traditions taking the place of mm-hmm. the actual purpose of the celebration, because today our topic yep. is what?
Our topic today is our very last of God is Not,
mm-hmm.
and today it is God is Not Religious.
God is not religious. That might be news to you, listener, but we're going to put this into context for you. You can decide if you agree with us or disagree with us on this, but God is not religious.
Yeah.
What does it mean?
Well, I think a good way to think about it initially, there's a couple different topics we want to cover with this, mm-hmm. but the first, I think you can really get at a guy named Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who was famous during World War II, died for his faith under the Nazi regime, died for his Christian faith. He talked about how religion, the way he put it is, religion is the garment of the Christian faith. It's like the outfit it wears.
Mm-hmm.
And the garment changes over time, but it doesn't mean the faith
right.
has changed. And so he spent a lot of his writing and thinking and devotional life wondering what's under the garment
mm-hmm.
that never changes. And so that first kind of way to think about God is not religious is, as I said to somebody earlier today, and they looked at me like it was funny, but I say it all the time, so I don't think it's funny anymore. You can't swing a cat in Fort Smith without hitting a church, right?
Right. Yep.
For all the swinging of cats you do. And every single church is going to have a different way it does different things. We have two PCUSA, Presbyterian Church USA churches in town. We do things differently from each other, much less you go across denominations and across Protestant, Roman Catholic, all of that. That's religion. That is not who God is. That's
right.
the garment that we human beings place around our faith, and it will shift and change as the needs and the spirituality changes of mm-hmm. what, because hopefully it's helping.
Right.
Its goal is actually to be a tool. Sometimes it's in the way, but its goal is to help. And when that cloak is no longer needed and no longer helps, that's not what's going to be the cloak of the faith anymore mm-hmm. then.
Yeah, so give us an example in your own life of kind of that. Something that is important to you as a garment of faith, but you understand in your mind is not actually part of the Christian faith. Like I was talking about the tree.
That's interesting. Well, for example, you have something called liturgical churches and non-liturgical churches. Those are the fancy names. And we happen to be in the liturgical church branch. And that means we follow certain seasons in the year. So we don't just celebrate Christmas. We celebrate 4 weeks before mm-hmm. called Advent to prepare.
Mm-hmm.
We don't just celebrate Easter. We celebrate 6-7 weeks before Lent to prepare. These are important seasons to our denomination, they're important seasons to me. I don't know that God cares, real frankly.
Right.
Again, that is supposed to be a tool that is supposed to be drawing me closer. It's not who God is.
Right. If we believe God exists outside of time,
yeah.
then liturgical time,
yeah.
by its very nature, is not any of God's business.
Yeah.
It's a human construction.
It's my need.
Right. We created that
mm-hmm.
in order to help us
mm-hmm.
connect
yes.
to the God who exists out of time by changing our own experience
yes.
of time.
And it's very important, and that's
mm-hmm.
that's really neat. And
yep.
if especially if it helps, it's really neat. Where we can get kind of funky with it is if I then go out and go to my Baptist friends and say, "You aren't real Christians. Because you don't follow a liturgical
right.
year."
Right. You did. What do you
or
mean
if
you
they
don't?
Come yeah. to me and they say, "You're not real Christians because you do."
Mm-hmm.
Well, God's not any of that.
Right.
We're talking about different cloaks.
Right.
We're wearing, not God himself.
Right. And so I think that's where we can get bogged down a lot of times. I do it, you do it, we all do it, where we muddle. I wouldn't say mistake or confuse. I would say muddle. So we get them mixed up together. So all of a sudden, this thing that's supposed to help draw us nearer to God becomes a part of who God is.
Yeah.
And that's where we have to be very discerning in our faith and in our churches.
Well, and what's supposed to be a tool and a support and a help should not become a wedge.
Right. Right.
Now, you want to talk about something God is not in favor of and really does concern God, I have to believe, is when Christian brothers and sisters put a wedge between each other.
Right. So, great example of that, right? Music. Does God care when the song you sing was written? Does God care if it's accompanied by an organ or a piano or a guitar?
Short answer, yes. No. Well, what if it's not an a white male composer from the 1800s?
Right.
Well, I think God does care if it's not that. No, yeah. I'm teasing. You know, there is something that's been termed, I'm teasing, there is something that's been termed, the shorthand is worship wars. Mm-hmm. And that's what that means. If you've ever heard that phrase, worship wars, what that's over is music. Right. Isn't that fascinating?
It is. And that's where the, like you and I have both experienced this, that's where the muddling comes up.
Yes.
Because it's entirely legitimate for me, Phil Blackburn, to say I prefer hymns. That is perfectly legitimate.
Yeah.
It is entirely legitimate.
I feel closer to God. I feel more worshipful.
Give me
With hymns.
With hymns.
Yes.
And it's entirely legitimate for some other folks in our church who I know and love to say, I prefer a contemporary Christian song.
Mm-hmm.
That's all legitimate.
Absolutely.
When we say that one is more faithful than the other because of style.
Yeah.
Because of style. Then we have mixed it all up. God doesn't care.
Yeah. So God says make a joyful noise.
So if God doesn't care,
Yeah.
If God doesn't care, then what are we talking about?
Yeah.
That's where, and I think that's what people maybe respond to when they look at the church and they'll be like, I want to get closer to God and you're fighting about a piano versus a guitar, right?
Yeah.
Like as an example. And I think it's a hindrance to the church in general. Because the more you become steeped in church, the longer you attend church, the more those trappings, the more that garment becomes really important to you.
Well, and I think it's an interesting thing to say that you've now led us to, because sometimes when people will say, well, okay, great, I agree with you, God's not religious, and guess what, I'm not either. And one of the big phrases now is spiritual but not religious, right? I'm spiritual, I can go be spiritual in the woods. It's just God in me, or it's just Jesus in me, or it's just the Spirit in me, and I don't need a community with it. I don't need all that rigmarole, right? All that fake stuff. Well, that's not what we mean either, because, you know, Jesus calls us into community. Mm-hmm. There is no sense from Jesus that we can do this in the singular.
Mm-hmm.
We need one another, and he gave us one another. It's supposed to be a gift, and it is a gift, and necessary. So when we say that God isn't religious, we don't mean that God hates organized religion.
Right. God isn't religious, but God is also communal, right? There's a distinction. Like community is vital for us as Christians. It's vital to the Christian faith. Religion is that garment that a community puts on, and it's not illegitimate. But don't confuse it.
Yeah, just don't confuse it.
Right.
And don't start saying, well, that's who God is.
The garment itself is not God.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I want to bring up, so that's kind of one big piece of what God is not, how God is not religious, is this sort of that garment piece that changes over time and changes in any individual community. The other piece is, you know, religion, of course, has always existed since there's been people to make tools and look to the sky, right? There has been religion. But really, in a more modern era, in the last couple hundred years, the idea has become that religion is something inward, it's something personal, it's something private, it's something for me. And that's that other piece, that's that other whole umbrella of God is not religious. Because the idea that we can push God off to the side to be a private thing, or to be just a singular me thing that we've already gotten to, I mean, God's going to shatter through all those dividers we would set up. Mm-hmm. God will not be relegated
yeah.
to the private sphere.
Yeah, and I think, you know, listen, humans are inherently communal and relational beings.
Yeah.
I think it's part, like, as somebody who believes in being created in the image of God, I believe that's part of the image, right? We were created to be in relationship.
Yeah.
Our instinct to make faith personal and private, I think, cuts against the grain and is an overcorrection of the difficulties of communal worship.
Yeah, maybe going against the core of who we are.
Right, it is. It is, because it's hard. It is hard. And, you know, like, I always think about it, you know, as you know, I think of everything in sports metaphors, right?
Yes, I know.
I'm quite a sports fan, but you can pick anything you want and apply it to this. To me, it's a heck of a lot more fun to go to the stadium and be at the game with the crowd than it is to sit at home and watch it alone on my TV. Sometimes I can't go to the stadium, and the TV is the best I got.
And way more fun than watching it on your phone.
Way more fun.
Like, even
on, right.
Like, yes, you
right.
get even further and right. further and further right. from the community.
From the community,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And there's a reason that, like, during COVID, they piped in crowd noise to the games that were played in empty stadiums, because it felt wrong. Like, that's not part of it, mm-hmm. right? And so, you know, even in...
The players
right.
need the community
as you're,
there.
Right. As you're yeah. listening to this podcast, think about those other areas of your life where you need the community. It can be the same thing as going to a concert, going to a play, going to a movie with friends in the theater, mm-hmm. watching a movie at home with the whole family, mm-hmm. Going to a sporting event. All of these things are enhanced by the presence and participation of other people, even though the presence and participation of other people detracts from your ability as an individual to control the event,
yeah.
right? Like
yeah.
when I go to an OU football game, it would be easier for me if I was there alone because I would have everything exactly like
yeah.
I want it and be in the best seats. First of all, that's not possible. But second of all, it also would be no fun.
Yeah.
you know, it is no fun. I remember during COVID when you and I recorded the sermons,
mm-hmm.
one of our members said, could I come in and watch you record if nobody else is there? And we were like, sure. So they did. They came in and they watched me preach down in the fellowship hall, and they hated it.
Yeah, I was going to say, how'd that go?
They hated it.
It's awful.
Yeah, it was awful, uh-huh. right? So to that point that you were making, this pulling in of religion into the purely private and personal realm, you lose.
Yeah.
You lose more than you gain.
Absolutely. Even religion is not mm-hmm. supposed to be both just inward, just private, mm-hmm. just based on me
right.
and my needs. Well, if religion in its best form mm-hmm. is not those things, well, then for sure God is not.
Right.
God will not just stay in mm-hmm. your heart.
Right.
Let's put it that way. God's not going to just stay in your heart. God's roaming about.
Right.
Very, very busy. Out in the world, mm-hmm. In very public ways, mm-hmm. and in very communal ways.
Right.
And that's where God is, so you can't relegate.
Right.
So that's how he's not religious.
Right. You know, like, I think about this coming week, we have the Christmas store here at First Presbyterian. Just in a nutshell, we have a store where folks come in and buy toys for their kids at dramatically reduced prices.
Mm-hmm.
It takes quite a group of people to pull that off, mm-hmm. and we end up serving around
300 kids.
Around 300 kids.
Yep.
You know, I think everybody who participates in the Christmas store would probably change something about it.
Yeah.
Right?
yeah.
But it's not possible alone.
Yeah.
The Christmas store only is possible because we have like 50 people at this point who are willing to rein in their preferences for how it should go, collaborate, compromise, give of time, give of money, give of energy, in order to make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think in those moments where a family, you know, we've had literally had families say, thank you for letting me do this with dignity.
Mm-hmm.
I think in those moments, that's where God is, right? Is in that moment where
mm-hmm.
a person, we are able to help a person feel empowered and proud of
mm-hmm.
what they're able to do for their family.
Mm-hmm.
That's where God is. God's not in the how we go about the pricing or what wrapping we choose or what hours we're open. But those things make that moment happen. And those things and those people make that moment happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so as long as you don't lose sight of the fact that that moment is the purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing in worship. That moment when somebody walks in and has had a terrible week and they are ministered to in worship, or that moment when somebody comes in and that Sunday the Spirit moves in their life
mm-hmm.
in a unique way.
Mm-hmm.
All that work and details and everything is for that moment. The other stuff is, it's in service of that. It's not the moment itself.
Yeah, the other stuff was the cloak.
That was the cloak.
Yeah.
Right, and so you can create your own cloak, right? Like they're saying, like you can just make it all personal so it fits you perfectly. It's exactly what you want. But you're going to lose more than you gain.
You'll be so sad.
You will be so sad.
If you get it all the way you want it.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Then it's idolatry.
Well, exactly. I also want to say something about, and this, I want to kind of start this conversation. We won't go far with it because it kind of blows your mind when you think about it. But the other piece of God not being religious is, the shorthand would be, we might say, oh, religion is something I believe in, or religion is something I doubt, or I'm a believer, or I'm a doubter, or I'm an agnostic. Well, God's not religious. This is going to sound weird, but like, God's not something to believe in or to doubt. The name that God tells us to call him is simply I am. Like, deal.
Right.
This is not something to doubt or believe in, really, actually. It is maybe for your own heart. Mm-hmm. It is for your own path, but not for God.
No.
I am.
Mm-hmm.
And, Paul Tillich, another guy from the mid-1900s, he called God the ground of all being.
Yeah.
Which is such an interesting thing to think about, God being like, God is the ground of all being. And so this is not something to doubt or believe in. It just is.
Right. That's right. God's not going to be any different based on what you believe.
Yeah.
Your experience of God is.
Yes.
But God's not going to be any different.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. No, that's a good point. And I had a thought about that while you were saying it, and I can't remember what it was. But anyway.
Yeah, I think it is very interesting that we know it is Yahweh, right? Mm-hmm. Hebrew term is Yahweh. But that is just, dear listener, I'll just share with you, that's just the to be verb.
Right.
In Hebrew. So God just is.
But even that, that's what I was going to say. The name that you just said, religious practices grew up and rose up in ancient Judaism around that name.
Of course,
right?
Yes.
So so you could only say it in certain contexts. Only certain people could say it. It was held very carefully. Mm-hmm. Why? Because God's name changed? Because God would get furious if you said that? No. In order to maintain awe, reverence, and wonder.
It was for us.
It was for us.
It was
You don't want to just run around saying it willy-nilly.
Yeah.
The more you say it, the less
it
means.
It's special. It's holy. It means something.
Right. So the garment that they wore even existed mm-hmm. around God's name.
Yes.
And the unchangeability of God, the otherness of God is captured in that name, I am. But, we had to construct around it in order to be able to have that mean something.
Yes.
So,
yes.
There's nothing wrong with those practices. But again, it gets back to that idea of what's the outcome that we're looking for here? What's the purpose of this?
Mm-hmm.
And it is to draw us near to God, to serve God, to love others as God loves us. That's what we're trying to do here.
Yeah.
And
well, and I'm hopeful it'll help. We just had Thanksgiving. We got Christmas coming up. People are going to be having gatherings with all different kinds of people. They might be having gatherings with extended mm-hmm. family. And, surprise, not everybody gets along on mm-hmm. everything, and not everybody thinks the same way. And maybe some of this talk of God is not religious can actually be a little way in of like, do I really need to get snarky with Great Aunt Linda? That we don't agree, that she has a closed communion table mm-hmm. and I have an open communion table. I don't agree, mm-hmm. but is that God?
Yeah.
Is this something I need to fight about? Am I better pleasing God to find a bridge?
Does it really matter if it's brown gravy or white gravy? Is that really the purpose?
It might.
It might be. But depending on your family,
Choose brown gravy.
That's right.
Myself.
I like a good white gravy, and there you go. Anyway, all right, I think that's a good place to stop for now. And I think, and that is the last of our God is not. We may put a kind of a coda on things next week. With
yeah, we're gonna we'll drop something Advent related / Christmas related into your feed in the next week or two, and then we'll round out the year.
Yeah. So anyway, thanks so much for listening, everybody, and we will talk to you next time. Say goodbye, Tasha.
Goodbye, Tasha.
Thank you for listening to the One Prez Pod. Be sure to like and subscribe to this podcast wherever you found it, and go to onepres.org for more information about First Presbyterian Church. Until next time, peace.